preventing the Great Depression ahead. Since the subprime crisis began to unravel in August 2007, a whole host of doomsayers have come crawling out of the woodwork. Some are perennial quacks, like Ravi Batra. Others are academics who have happened to get the short-term facts right for once. By and large, they have predicted Armageddon in the wake of every financial crisis since their careers began. So, like a stopped clock, they finally got it right. However, Harry S. Dent Jr. is not a member of this panic du jour crowd. At the end of the 1991 to 1992 recession, he was one of the few who accurately forecast the tech boom that ended in 2000. Subsequently, he correctly predicted the rise and bursting of the housing and commodities bubbles. Like the trends editors, the H.S. Dent Foundation focuses on long-term forecasts driven by an ongoing analysis of demography and technology. And its short-term forecasts are based on the interplay of short-term technical indicators with these long-term trends and cycles. As a forecaster, Dent's expertise lies in his understanding of how long-term cycles tend to shape the economy across decades and even centuries. Therefore, this particular discussion doesn't focus on the next 12 to 18 months, which the trends editors will examine later in this special issue, but on the next 10 to 15 years. So, we'll explore the economic realities you are likely to face as a manager, investor, and consumer in the period from 2011 to 2025. Will there be a global depression resembling the 1930s? Will it be a healthy period of steady growth like the late 1940s and 1950s? Or will we see a tremendous boom time like we saw in the 90s? From his first book, Our Power to Predict, in 1990, to the current one, Dent has consistently relied upon the same demography-based framework. He assumes, first of all, that numerous economic patterns behave in predictable cycles. The most important of these is the generation wave, a construct describing the impact of each birth cohort as it moves through its life cycle. Dent's generation wave insights are built upon the landmark research of historians Neil Howe and William Strauss, described in their 1991 book titled Generations. The generation wave has four components of interest to economists. The first is the so-called birth wave, which tells us when people were born. The other waves are dependent on this demographic element and can be calculated from it. For example, the spending wave forecasts the amount of consumer spending at a given time in a generation. People change their buying habits and the amounts they spend depending on their age. You can also predict when a given generation will do its most innovative work, creating the so-called innovation wave. This corresponds to the age at which people begin their careers. The baby boomers brought on the information technology revolution when they began to enter the workforce. The last element is the organization wave. It marks the time when power is transferred from one generation to the next. The so-called Greatest Generation inherited political power from its predecessors in 1960 when John F. Kennedy was elected and held power until the administration of George H.W. Bush. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama were all born between 1946 and 1964, making them boomers. As Dent has previously shown, these demographic cycles and waves have historically correlated well with statistics regarding spending, productivity growth, and innovation. And he relies on the cycles of technological innovation, which create new economies, to aid in predicting economic growth and contraction. As Dent recently asserted in an interview with Portfolio magazine, consumers, on average, spend the most between the ages of 46 and 50. So when the most people are in that age group, consumer spending will be at its highest. Subsequently, spending will begin to turn down again as more people move into their 50s and 60s. Since consumer spending comprises 70% of U.S. GDP, this spending inevitably has a real impact on economic growth. Not surprisingly, corporate earnings follow the rising wave of spending by baby boomers that started in the 80s and climbed for more than 25 years. Unfortunately, according to Dent, the spending wave will peak and start down in 2010. Because Generation X is much smaller, the theory implies that a depression like malaise will prevail until the millennial generation reaches its high earning and spending years after 2020. Dent goes on to draw parallels to Japan, which faced a similar demographic decline and semi-depression beginning in 1990. Based on that, he makes the following predictions for the coming years. We are at the end of a great bubble that will burst, but it has not completely burst yet. In fact, Dent, like the trend's editors, foresaw the recovery that started in the second half of 2009. However, he went on to forecast that rising inflation, interest rates, and a resulting final bubble in the price of oil and other commodities would lead to a second down leg by late 2010 that would justify the title of his 2009 book, The Great Depression Ahead. Under this scenario, Dent expected oil to reach $200 a barrel this year, just when the spending cycle of boomers would begin its final downward trend. And so, just as the stock market was set to rise from 7,000 to 11,000, he recommended getting into cash as soon as possible. Dent still predicts that the commodity bubble will burst by the end of 2010, and that will set off a monumental crash of the stock market, which will continue for 2 years. He calls for the Dow to dip to as low as 3,800. He sees this depression taking the world economy on a downward spiral, bottoming out in 2012 when U.S. unemployment will hit 12% to 15%. Another rally in the stock market sometime after that will represent a money-making opportunity in stocks. The period from 2012 onward should also provide excellent bargains in real estate, but these should be sold before a second wave of the downturn hits. He sees that second smaller crash and economic contraction coming in the 2017 to 2020 timeframe. And Dent does not envision a complete recovery to a bull market and boom times until somewhere after 2023. Dent expects this depression to be about half as bad as the Great Depression, based on an estimate of a 15% drop in gross domestic product and unemployment of 12 to 15%. In that scenario, government revenue should drop by one-fourth. Those are pretty dire predictions, and they're certainly worthy of serious thought. But can we believe them? The answer is yes and no. Time after time, Dent's framework of cycles has proven itself to be absolutely correct in terms of direction and reasonably accurate in terms of timing, but significantly wrong in terms of magnitude. And each time, Dent has had to go back and refine the model to fit the actual results and to more accurately forecast the future. Even Dent himself issues caveats about timing and magnitude. He said in an interview, "We don't always get the timing precisely right. We often revise our short-term forecasts. But we're better at timing than magnitude, which is much harder to predict. We saw the 2000 crash coming, but didn't think it was going to be all that bad at first. Stocks did eventually make new highs afterward, but the Dow didn't go to 40,000 as we predicted." All in all, you'll find that Dent's forecasts are extremely useful for establishing a broad economic outlook. But they do not have the level of certainty or precision that readers of his new book often assume. After objectively evaluating the Great Depression ahead, the trends editors argued that the core scenario put forward for the coming decade is quite plausible. However, it's far from certain. And in fact, we contend that the short-term crisis we're experiencing today is actually forcing structural changes that will make Dent's forecasts less likely to unfold in the way he expects. But if Dent's forecasts are likely to miss the mark, what is the economy likely to look like between 2011 and 2025? The trends editors offer 9 forecasts. First, the growth of U.S. domestic consumption will slow, but not nearly enough to create a depression lasting into the early 2020s. Back in 1989, Dent formulated the fundamental spending wave using U.S. birth data, lagged by 47 years, to match the peak of spending for each birth cohort. He overlaid this spending wave on top of stock indexes going back a century and found a very good correlation. Extrapolating forward, he accurately forecast the timing and magnitude of the tech bubble through 2000. However, this model has had to be adjusted substantially to explain the economy since then. And it's not just limitations on the explanatory power of the spending wave and the inclusion of other cycles that have less clear empirical support that raise questions. The trends editors see abundant evidence that this particular generation will follow life cycle consumption patterns and production patterns that are markedly different from those of their parents. Notably, a new model of life cycle spending patterns developed in 2008 by McKinsey & Company shows that for the average early boomer, spending peaks at age 62, not 47. After having roughly doubled their per capita spending between the ages of 30 and 55, boomers are expected to reduce it on average by about 20% over the course of retirement. We'll explain the implications more fully in Part 2, The Boomers Move Into Their Golden Years. Second, the low cost of capital due to the global savings glut will be good for business, but bad for investors. The cost of capital will remain historically low because U.S. boomers will be saving right along with the Chinese, Japanese, and Europeans. This will accelerate investment in productivity-enhancing technology, as well as research and development. Coupled with a global skills shortage, this will mean bigger returns flowing to labor and lower returns flowing to capital. This will create even greater incentives for baby boomers to keep their jobs and remain in the workforce. This, in turn, will keep productivity growing briskly. As one of the few investments with high returns, venture capital will see a resurgence that will mesh very nicely with the coming wave of entrepreneurship. And don't worry about the rumors that global savers might abandon the dollar. The Financial Times quoted Luo Ping, a director general at the China Banking Regulatory Commission, as saying, "Except for U.S. treasuries, what can you hold? Gold? You don't hold Japanese government bonds or UK bonds. U.S. treasuries are the safe haven." Even if the dollar depreciates because of Washington's financial bailouts, he added, China has no other options. Money from all over the world has been flooding into American markets even in this crisis, sending the dollar to its highest levels and bond yields to their lowest. Third, unlike the 90s in Japan, mechanisms for rapid consumer deleveraging will come into play ahead of the demographic downturn to limit the long-term effects. The beginning of Japan's depression in the 90s closely resembled the early months of the Great Recession in the United States. A real estate bubble collapsed, wiping out an enormous chunk of nominal wealth. So Japan not only faced a decline in consumption due to its aging population, but a financial crisis that sapped confidence and destroyed purchasing power. It's the same sort of challenge the United States faced in 2008 and 2009. However, while Japan's banks refused to acknowledge the reality, mark-to-market accounting forced U.S. banks and the Federal Reserve to address the problem early. And a number of actions were taken to help rehabilitate the stronger banks and reopen the free flow of cheap credit to businesses and individuals. Four of these were particularly beneficial. First, the Fed expanded its lending facilities to ensure that banks had plenty of cash. Second, the U.S. Treasury injected money into the institutions via equity purchases to ensure that they met capital requirements, and most of this has now been repaid, with the Treasury earning a nice profit. Third, mark-to-market accounting rules were suspended, permitting banks to revalue CDO tranches on their books at realistic levels. And fourth, new foreclosure abatement programs were put into place to reassure lenders and creditors and give them an alternative to the disruptive foreclosure process. As of this writing, consumer deleveraging had shrunk U.S. consumer credit balances for the 15th straight month. Yet retail sales were picking up. The reason? Incomes and balance sheets were recovering so as to permit consumers to pay down debt and return to pre-panic consumption patterns. Fourth, America's productivity boom will continue and even accelerate, triggering a wave of creative destruction that will propel us into a prosperous future. We're at the midpoint in this fifth major technology revolution in human history. As explained in Part 6 of this report, 9 new industries are about to burst onto the stage and drive a quantum leap in productivity and global wealth. The resulting wave of creative destruction will create new business models and demolish old ones. In the process, it will marginalize much of the demographic and public policy drag that is the source of our recent gloom. Fifth, U.S. fiscal policy will take a dramatic turn toward reduced spending and lower taxes through 2014. As a result of the 2008 panic, the Great Recession, and the Great Reflation, public sector deficits have ballooned in the U.S., EU, and Japan. The major worry today is that this fiscal drag will undermine growth, resulting in a vicious cycle whereby economic contraction and rising deficits become mutually reinforcing. Fortunately, history shows us a clear, though not easy, way out of this predicament. As recently explained in Bank Credit Analyst's European Investment Strategy report, there are at least 7 instances in Europe over the past 30 years where public sector spending accelerated to levels like those we've recently seen in Greece, Spain, and Portugal. However, when fiscal deficits were reduced by 10% or more, growth accelerated in all countries except one, enabling them to dig their way out of the crisis. From these case studies, BCA draws 2 conclusions. First, when it comes to fiscal restraint, expenditure cuts lead to better results than tax increases, since tax increases tend to kill economic activity. And second, political will must prevent social pressures from undermining implementation. And significantly, recent polls indicate that a broad segment of Americans is willing to undertake such a solution. Sixth, unleashing what University of Michigan professor C.K. Prahalad calls the fortune at the bottom of the pyramid will dramatically increase global consumption. Because of global integration, the key to future affluence is the global spending wave rather than America's domestic spending wave. Based on United Nations data, a spending wave reflecting the world as a whole can be constructed. It clearly shows that global consumer spending should continue to increase between now and 2020. In the 21st century, a nation's individual economy still matters. But increasingly, it's the global economy that determines the wealth of nations. In recent years, U.S. consumer demand has accounted for about 18% of global GDP. And while consumer spending represents 70% of the U.S. economy, it's only a third of China's. That high level of American consumer demand was fueled by cheap goods and cheap credit provided by workers and savers in other countries. U.S. consumer spending is vital to global economic growth because it drives exports for so much of the rest of the world. But increasingly, the growing global middle class will compensate for slower growth in U.S. consumption. We'll discuss this more fully in the context of Part 3, Globalization, the Wellspring of Global Economic Growth. Seventh, as Dent predicts, housing prices will drop up to 60% in some places from their 2006 peak, but most of this drop has already occurred. In both 1990s Japan and 1930s America, a demographic downturn became a depression because speculative excesses of the prior boom cycle were not quickly addressed. In terms of housing, the key question is affordability. In the first quarter of 2010, the affordability of existing homes had already reached levels not seen since 1990 or earlier. That means a lot of the excesses that the Japanese real estate market had to work off over a period of decades can be done away with within a year or two here. And fortunately, much of the excess inventory, and consequently the biggest drops in prices, were located in regions that will benefit from internal migration. In addition, home builders will change strategy by directing their efforts at first-time buyers, as well as toward plans in which renters can become buyers. While Dent doesn't believe that this will happen until the millennials come of age in 2020 or so, the trends editor see it happening within 2 years. And, as Dent correctly points out, those who are buying a starter home beginning in that time frame will enjoy much lower mortgage rates than in previous years. Eighth, the short-lived 2010 commodities price spike will be far smaller than predicted by Dent. The price of oil may swing upward a bit more in the next year, but the trends editors do not believe that it will hit $200 a barrel. As heavy investors in U.S. financial assets, the Saudis have no interest in triggering another demand-destroying bubble. The prices of other commodities will also rise, but avoid a near-term bubble, thereby lessening a prolonged return to recession. And ninth, the coming decade will routinely require levels of adaptability, resilience, and flexibility rarely seen in the past 3 decades. Americans have proved to be very adaptable in the face of adversity over the history of our country. It will be no different in the future. Although the trends editors differ with Harry Dent on key points, there is no question that more challenging times are upon us. This means that we will have to adjust the way we do business and respond calmly and rationally in the face of emerging challenges. With new ways of doing business in a more sustainable manner, the booms and busts of the future will be smaller. As a result, there will be less likelihood of the excesses that caused the present crisis. And, as radical technological innovations come online, businesses will have to embrace them to produce ever more efficient and productive organizations.